the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And time for another edition of Abandoned Manitoba with our
resident historian?
Venerable was the word I was
venerable.
Looking for.
Venerable. Oh, that sounds so star.
Legendary host.
Oh, legendary.
Gordon Goldsboro.
Legends are told.
Yes. From the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
Remind us what we are discussing this week.
Well, when we think about the people who lost their lives in the two world wars, we tend to forget those who died here in Manitoba. So today, we're talking about a few of the fatalities on the home front. And one of them we're going to talk about occurred on a dance floor near Brandon.
Wow. Well, so how many home front fatalities occurred in Manitoba?
I don't think anyone has an accurate count of the total number. I asked my friend, Daryl Taves, who has spent years researching Manitoba's war dead. You know, how many people during the First and Second World Wars, how many of them died here in Manitoba? And he referred me to the website of the Commonwealth War Graves Foundation. But unfortunately, it doesn't specifically identify those buried in Manitoba, so it would be a very laborious task to construct a comprehensive list.
Yeah.
Using my own resources for the First World War, I found information only for Camp Hughes.
What is Camp Hughes?
Well, it was a major First World War training facility located just west of Carberry that operated from 1910 to 1917. There is a military cemetery at the site, and it contains at least six graves. I say at least because there's a few unmarked graves I'm not really sure about. But at least six soldiers are buried there who died between July and September in 1916. I'm inclined to think that more than six soldiers died in Manitoba during the First World War. In other words, this is not a full list for the for the entire province. But again, I was stymied in my efforts to find more. So if any of our listeners know where I can find information on this, I would be very pleased to hear about it.
Well, so these six soldiers that are in the Camp Hughes Cemetery, how were they killed? Was it during military exercises?
Well, that would seem logical, right? I looked at online medical records for them, and the causes of their deaths weren't given in all of the cases. But, well, it appears one man died from chronic alcoholism.
Oh.
Other causes of death were infections and respiratory conditions. In other words, most of them didn't seem to have died from military misadventures arising from their training. It was simply incidental other reasons that they died.
And that's for the First World War. So were you able to find more information about fatalities in the military during the Second World War?
Well, yes, somewhat. As listeners may know, Canada played a major training role during the Second World War, especially of flight crews for military aircraft. People from around the Commonwealth, as well as the United States, came to Canada to be trained as pilots, navigators, bombardiers, radio operators, mechanics, and more. Many of them subsequently served overseas with various air forces, but unfortunately, some did die here in Canada. In fact, I've heard that the proportion of people who died in training was higher than the proportion who died in active duty. And I suppose this makes sense, because when people are not fully trained, the possibility of accidents is, you know, probably higher than if they were more experienced.
Are there any stats on like Air Force personnel killed in the line of duty here in this province?
Yes, there are some. I compiled a list of all of the Air Force training facilities that operated in Manitoba during the Second World War, and I was lucky to find a website that listed for each of those facilities, as well as ones elsewhere in Canada too, the names of the people who had been killed there. There were 246 names on the list. In other words, it was a fairly considerable number.
Yeah.
The largest number of fatalities, 40, occurred at the number one air navigation school based near Rivers, Manitoba. Of that total, there were seven times when four or more deaths occurred on the same date. In other words, you know, you might have one died on this date, another died on that date, but then there'd be this cluster all dying on the same date. And I interpreted this to mean that one or more planes had crashed and members of their crews were killed. For at least one of those incidents that occurred on the 9th of June, 1942, I am certain this was the case.
Well, how did you know?
Well, two ways. Usually when multiple fatalities occurred at military facilities during the war, it would be reported in newspapers. In this particular case from 1942, Winnipeg newspapers had lengthy articles in the days immediately after the crash. They reported that an Avro Anson training aircraft had crashed during a severe electrical and rainstorm, and its flight crew, four men in their mid-20s, were killed instantly. As a result of the rain, though, roads in the area were exceptionally poor, so local people were deputized to guard the crash until authorities could arrive. 50 years later, one of those deputies petitioned the local municipal council to erect a permanent marker near the crash site, which is located about 5 miles east of the village of Cardale. That monument, bearing the names of those four young men, still stands today.
So in general, then, what happened to those who died during military training?
The usual practice, I'm told, was to return the bodies of Canadians and Americans to their home communities for burial. In the case of the four men who died near Cardale, they were buried in British Columbia, in Ontario, and in Quebec. Those from further away, from Australia, from New Zealand, from Britain, and elsewhere, would typically be buried in military cemeteries here in Manitoba. So, for example, of the 27 fatalities at the number 33 Service Flying Training School near Carberry, 90% of them were buried in the military cemetery at Brandon.
Very interesting. Your clue referred to somebody that died on a dance floor. What was the situation there?
Well, not all deaths associated with military training in Manitoba were themselves military personnel. One of the more unusual home front fatalities that I learned about from listener Richard Lapp occurred on the 16th of July, 1943. That evening, an Avro Anson took off from the No. 5 Air Observer School here in Winnipeg, and it flew west toward a practice bombing range southwest of Brandon. Now, their target was identified by lights and a red arrow pointing to it, but unfortunately, the air crew misidentified another lighted area near the village of Roseland, about 4 miles to the east of the true target. The lighted area was, in fact, an open-air dance organized by a local farm family as a fundraiser for the Red Cross. The bombardier dropped a bomb on the dance floor, and, well, unfortunately, his aim was good. 21-year-old Lloyd Shields, who was dancing at the time, was injured severely along with five others. The plane circled, and the shocked dancers thought it might be coming back for a second bombing, so they turned off all the lights, and fortunately, the air crew got the message and no further bombing occurred. But Mr. Shields, he died soon after the bombing and was eventually buried in the Brandon Cemetery. An irony is that at the time of his death, Lloyd Shields had a brother who was serving in the Royal Canadian Air Force who survived the war, whereas Mr. Shields, Lloyd Shields, who was not serving in the military, he died.
I don't think, in fact, I know, I had never heard that story before. That's a real shocker.
Yeah, that a dance floor was bombed by an air crew in training.
What a tragedy. So what about that air crew who dropped the bomb, were they held responsible for that?
Well, obviously an inquest was called by the Brandon coroner and they heard testimony from the four members of the flight crew. But subsequently a jury found that the bombardier's vision had been obstructed because the windows in the plane's nose had been painted over. The result was that he could see downward, but he couldn't see straight ahead. And so, you know, essentially he couldn't tell exactly where he was and if he was bombing the right target. And so in the end, the incident was deemed to have been an accident. The crew was exonerated, but the jury did recommend that procedural changes be put in place to ensure the bombardier's vision would never be impaired again and that the bombing targets would be sufficiently well lighted. They'd have additional lighting to ensure they could be recognized from all angles of approach. There is also one additional final element to the tragedy that I find curious. I wondered about the bombardier who had dropped the bomb on the dance floor. What had happened to him? Well, I found his full name and rank in a newspaper story about the bombing near Brandon, and I found, searching online, a man with the exact same name, the exact same rank, who was killed in a mid-air collision just a week after that inquest in Brandon. And my first thought was, well, that's him. But this death occurred on the home front too, but in Australia. This fellow was from Australia. Now, I find it just too suspicious that the name could be exactly the same with the same rank. I'm thinking he maybe went home to Australia and then within a week died himself. You know, could it be the same guy? Well, I don't think we're ever going to know.
Wow. Wow. Interesting story, Gordon. Once again, you've brought something unique to the band in Manitoba. So thank you for that one.
You're welcome.
What's up for next week?
Well, one of the more interesting areas of Winnipeg, architecturally and socially, is one of its earliest neighborhoods, Point Douglas. Next week, we're going to walk the streets of Point Douglas and point out some of its many highlights.
I'll be sure to tune into that one. Thanks very much, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.